Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. How you doing, Andy?
I'm doing good, Jimmy. I'm hanging in there. How are you?
I am good. I know you're in the midst of a busy week. You and I, we're supposed to be old, semi-retired guys, and we both have these busy schedules.
Yeah, a little bit self-induced, but yes. It's my wife's been retired for 2 years now, for all of you listeners out there. That's interesting. And more busy when she's more busy doing different things than now that she's retired than when she wasn't. I found it fascinating.
Well, yeah, that's you. When you retire, Andy, it's all of a sudden, oh, now I have the time to do everything I've wanted to do for the last 40 years.
Yeah, it's partly that, but it's not really that. It's just you just find a different way to make yourself relevant to you. That's the way I'll put it. You make yourself relevant to you by making yourself busier than you need to be. We don't need to be this busy, Jimmy. But this is the fun part. This is the fun part for us. Is this work?
Neither one of us has to do this. Both of us, I think, want to do this. It's fun to talk sports. It's fun to talk specifically college football. And Andy, I'll add this. It's always fun to talk with you.
Oh, well, isn't that too kind? I'll mail your check out to you next week.
Appreciate it, Andy. All right, let's get started with the show. What I wanted to get to this week is spring camp has begun. Penn State football, they've begun their practices. So everyone, it's like opening day in baseball, which has been this past week also. So everyone gets excited about that. You know, everything is good. Let's talk a bit about this Penn State football team with the questions that I have, Andy, for this team. And I'm going to start on the defensive side of the ball. It's interesting with Matt Campbell coming over with much of his staff. So there are certain advantages to that, which we'll get to. On the defensive side of the ball, his defensive coordinator chose to retire, did not come over with him. So it was time for a new defensive coordinator, and he brought in Danton Lynn, who we know he played at Penn State, so he's a Penn Stater that way. But he's new. He's new to Matt Campbell, new to Matt Campbell's staff, new to the entire team. We've gone through this before, though, Andy, with a new defensive coordinator. What challenges are there?
So let's talk about Lynn, right? Like, first of all, yes, former Nittany Lion. Don't forget that, because that matters at Penn State. That's part of the nuance of Penn State. That's a big deal. You forgot to mention, they got him from USC. It's not like they found some guy, you know, coaching at a, you know, group of four team, right? Like, he was a defensive coordinator at USC. And USC took him from UCLA really quick, which is where his star really rose. His star power really rose. So let's talk about this. So it is a new defensive coordinator. He will bring a structural, brand new defense to the table. It's a hybrid, right? Like, it's a 3-4. He runs a 3-4 as his base defense, but it's a 4-2-5-3-4 combo. It's not built on anything traditional. It's all about disguising and bringing pressure from all over the field. A lot of player versatility is a big key to this. And on the back end, he runs these complex shell coverages that are built to stop big plays. So And describing this, it sounds like you're like, wow, that's a very complex. It is not a very complex defense. It is a multiple defense built on dudes being fast and guys being able to do two or three different things when asked at any moment. The flip side of that is, I think at least half, maybe two thirds of the meat of this defense is going to be transferred, but I don't think that's really relevant because the Penn State players that are left are starting a new defense. The Iowa State players that are coming in are starting a new defense. It's a new defensive coordinator. So they're ground upping, Jimmy. They're like, okay, this spring camp will be about Lynn and his staff, particularly Terry Smith, them identifying sort of these are the components we have. They will spend this spring figuring out even some of the injured guys. They already know what the components are. These are the components and the pieces that we have. Of the seven or eight, you know, variations that we want to do, what are the three or four that we think we have the personnel to do best with? That's what you're going to find because, you know, they're not looking for a few good men. They're looking for like eight or nine guys to fill two or three different roles in certain situations. Does that make sense? They're looking for guys to play. Okay, you're going to play 30 snaps here, but you're not going to play these kind of 30 snaps. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, Andy. And what I – there's the difference between you and I, and you look very technically at his style of defense, what he does. Here's what strikes me with the changeover is the contrast to Jim Knowles.
Oh, and yeah, yeah.
You see this in, again, I'm a big baseball fan. You know, if the last manager was a disciplinarian, the new manager is going to be a player's guy, you know, and vice versa. That's what always happens. It's always the contrast. And with Jim Knowles, it seemed like information was going to these players in a fire hose and they just couldn't consume it. And now you're hearing quotes like they're implementing things at a slower pace. Right. He wants, in quotes, I have this obnoxious communication, meaning I want to communicate really well that there is no doubt. You know, it's hey, I'm communicating, not to the point where you get it right, but to the point where you can't get it wrong. That it just feels like you had this type of coach last time. We're going the other way now.
Yeah, so Jim was – I forgot to mention his name. I was like, yeah, that's right. He didn't have as many pieces as Manny had the year before, let's just be honest. But, dude, he had plenty of pieces. And whatever fire hose he was spraying – they weren't buying it. That was clear. I mean, even in the first three games of that JV schedule last year, you were like, they don't look very good defensively. Everyone was looking at the offense, but I was like, I think they look worse defensively maybe than they do offensively. And then the floodgates opened. They did not play poorly against Oregon. They didn't play well. They didn't impact the game greatly, but they didn't play poor and contribute to them losing that football game. But then it went right. The floodgates open, and they were just dreadful as a unit. So, in the change and the slower pace, there's going to be unknown development that needs to happen because of all of this turnover, right? We've talked about that, but there's so many components that are gone, and it's not like Matt brought in a new defensive staff. He brought the same old staff like he's doing offensively. He's brought in a whole new group. So you've got a defensive coaching staff that has to find their dudes and they have to identify their holes and fill them. So slow is going to be better. Less is going to be more because like I said, they don't know what they're working with fully yet. This is spring is what they need to find out a little bit about what they got and who their dudes are and what they can do with them. And add from there. So it is going to be very slow development. I do like that term from you, Jimmy.
And you know what's interesting here, Andy? We joked before we started this segment. I sent you my notes and you teased me about having 47 questions. So far, we've gotten through one, so we're good. All right, next up, I asked, who's going to be the backup quarterback? We know the starter's going to be Rocco back. He's coming off an injury, but all indicators are he's ahead of schedule. He's throwing fine. It wasn't his throwing shoulder. I don't think anyone is concerned. He's fine. Question is, how about a backup quarterback? And we all know that could be very relevant. Alex Mansky, a young quarterback who was at Iowa State for a year. They brought him along. Guess what? He's out injured. He's actually literally back in Iowa right now. Does that open a door for a guy by the name of Connor Barry? Who's that, Andy?
No, it's not even a debate, Jimmy. Alex Mansky, as long as he's not long-term injury, let's use the old school term. As long as it's not long-term injury, in other words, it does means he can't participate in training camp. He's QB2 for Penn State. He's the backup. I mean, how many young look in the transfer portal era, Jimmy? Think about this. How many young, you know, early career, first year signal callers, they go in the transfer portal and they transfer to be the second guy? Right? Like, it doesn't happen. He's a unicorn. It's a very unusual situation that he even transferred to Penn State. So at the very least, they had to say, well, you're the quarterback in waiting and you're going to be the backup to Rocco coming off injury this year. That had to be at the very least. So I don't even think it's up for debate. It's a very unusual situation. Guys don't transfer portal as quarterbacks to be backups. They just don't. They want to compete to start. That wasn't an option at Penn State. Rocco Beck's a starter. End of story. So he's your QB2. I don't even think it's a talk about.
See, I'm going to disagree a bit, and let me explain why.
Oh, I'm interested to hear this one.
Well, the fact that we don't know what the injury is to Alex Mansky. What we do know is he's not around this spring. He's getting zero reps, okay? So we don't know even come fall if he's going to be physically 100% at the start of camp or if we're going to hear he's limited. Meanwhile, you've got a guy who comes in, a veteran guy. I think it may be a case where, hey, look, we need a guy who's not going to screw this up. Rocco's out for a game. We might need a veteran guy, a veteran presence. All right, that's the last word for quarter one. Lots more questions for Andy when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He is Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. Andy, you know, we wrapped up and we kind of short-circuited the conversation as we were going to a hard break about this backup quarterback position, and you were all about Alex Mansky, and he came over, no doubt. He had experience with Matt Campbell and his staff, Mauser, the offensive coordinator, and he came in knowing he would be a backup to Rocco Beck, but most the heir apparent. Come 27, he would be the starter. But the question becomes, Connor Barry came in also. This is a guy with 1 year of eligibility left, coming from a small school. Now, if you're the perspective of the player, why did he come in knowing he's going to be the backup at best? You know what? He probably had multiple years at, a small school. He was wanted by Matt Campbell's staff. That's often lost in the equation. When a player comes in, it's not just the player's decision. It's also the team's decision to bring him in. I feel like they wanted this insurance policy of a veteran guy. And I think the veteran guy is, he's here for only 1 year, and he's here as an insurance policy on Rocco Beck. If Rocco Beck gets hurt, we may need to turn to this guy. So that's why I think that be the case. Andy, unfortunately, well, I was going to say, we'll only find out which way it'll be if Rocco Beck gets hurt, but we'll get the pecking order come fall. Let's move on. You and I are notoriously slow. You want to make a point? Go ahead.
You're overcooking my grits, Jimmy. You need to have less ingredients. Your question was, who is the backup quarterback? Alex Mansky.
All right. Let's go to the next question. You know, Andy, I feel like the running back room is in pretty good shape. It is. Yeah, now, it's not where it was a year ago when you had two NFL players there. But what you do have are two transfers, Carson Henson from Iowa State, who was their lead back a year ago. So he obviously is coming in with the thought that he's going to get carries. You have James Peoples, highly rated player coming into college at Ohio State, very highly regarded. Being a backup at Ohio State does not mean you're chopped liver. You're probably a pretty good player. And two returnees, Quentin Martin and Cam Wallace, who especially Quentin Martin really showed something in that pinstripe ball. So, Andy, is there a lead running back here?
So by lead, I would assume you're saying, is there an RB1, a clear guy, the dude?
Yes.
Because running back is more of like a pack mentality in this latest shift in the modern game, right? There can be one that through the pack mentality emerges, right? Like, but you go into it with the pack mentality. The pack mentality is where we're going to start. And yeah, okay, the guys that are still Penn State guys left over from the previous regime, they're in the pack, but when you're talking about Carson Hansen and James Peoples, they're your pack, right? They're your first line pack leaders. I mean, Hansen, two seasons, he emerged out of Iowa State's pack as the guy last year. He was part of the pack the year before, but he brings more than 1,600 yards, 19 touchdowns, solid, you know, two-year run, 5 yards per carry. That's something you always look at. He brings solid numbers to the table. He has a ceiling, but underneath that ceiling, he fits inside his box extremely well and does what is inside that box consistently at a next level. And that's what you expect for him. James Peoples from Ohio State is your upside pack wild card guy, right? Like you said, highly recruited, highly regarded. At OSU, picking up table scraps, right? Like, he's a junkyard dog fighting for RB3 table scraps where the running back position is full of high draft picks at Ohio State during his first two seasons. He scratches and claws his way, 60-plus carries last year, by the way, more than 550 yards, right? And he averages 5.6 yards per carry last year in 61. And remember, their offensive line became shambles last year, remember, because of injuries and all that. Their offensive line was not elite by any stretch of the imagination. So I really feel, while Quentin Martin and Cam Wallace should be part of the conversation, the real conversation is about a two, you know, in my estimation, what I call a two-dog lead pack, and it's Hansen and Peoples, and you have a little bit of, you know, yin and yang there, and one has a ceiling, and I don't think the other one does. One will emerge. It's generally going to happen, Jimmy. One of these guys will emerge as you know, I'm talking 6, 7, 8 games in, they're still going to run their pack mentality, but one will emerge as that guy needs to be getting the ball, right? One will establish themselves as that guy. I don't know which one, but I think it is a strength of, it is a position of strength through the transition of Penn State, despite what was lost there, which is, was a very, very high level. I still see it as a position of strength for the Penn State offense in 2026.
I'm going to be really fascinated, Andy, by James Peoples because of this. I think it could be an indicator of how good Matt Campbell's staff is at scouting players. Here's a guy, as you said, fighting for scraps as RB3 at Ohio State. So yep. It wasn't like they went out and got the biggest of big names who was ready to move on and they enticed them with big money. They went out. Did they identify someone who was undervalued at his current school? We're gonna find that out. I think it's was a good bet though that they made there. All right, let's move on to my next question. I phrase it this way: is bigger better? And Andy, I'm talking about both the offensive line and the defensive line, where they're being rebuilt. They're bringing in a lot of really big boys for those positions. And, you know, but inexperienced, does bigger mean better? And just as an example of where I'm talking about with bigger and better, at defensive tackle, Andy, I wrote down the notes on the three transfers, Tapaki from UCLA, Vakalai from Utah, and Williams from UCLA. They weigh in at 337, 337, and 329. Three returners at that position, Caleb Brewer, who's making the move from offense to defense, Ty Blanding, Liam Andrews, 293, 296, 290. They are, per man, about 40 pounds difference.
So this is a disclaimer for longtime KSN fans and new-time KSN fans. Jimmy has a fascination with the bigger defensive tackle and the weight. He never, ever mentions it until he gets to the defensive tackle position. And then that's all he wants to talk about. How big you need that big, dominant 330-pound tackle. Look, I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't think this – when you're talking about is bigger going to be better on these two lines, these two lines are where the rubber is going to meet the road. There is plenty around these two lines, right? You look at it offensively, quarterback, tight end, running back. Who knows about receiver? I have no idea. I'm not even going to go. We're not even going to go there. Let's wait until October to talk about receiver, Jimmy. Please, please, I'm begging you. No, I'm just joking. But I'm saying there are pieces around them that you know and see and can understand. And then on the defensive side, you've got safeties. You've got a couple experienced linebackers. You know, you have some, you've got corners that we've seen can play and some potential there. You see a bunch of pieces around them. Then you go to the center, which is you build from the inside out. Offensive line, defensive line. Box of chocolates, right? So many questions. Way more questions than answers. Opportunity for Penn State in 2026 on their schedule. We've talked about it. Everybody knows it. If that opportunity is to be realized, bigger is going to have to be better because the rubber's going to have to meet the road there. So, you know, it's very similar to last year offensively for me. And you had a capable quarterback, you know, running backs, tight ends were still quality despite loss of a, you know, first round draft pick. You still were like, what the heck is going on at wide receiver? And on the offensive line, you had what you thought was an elite offensive line that simply couldn't find the start button, right? It took a changes in latitude and changes in attitude, in other words, the firing of the head coach, for them to find their lockstep and flourish, right? But it took way too much time for what Penn State needed. I think this team has a little bit more time. But at the end of the day, the fact that Penn State could run the ball like they ran the ball and operate with a backup quarterback and win games under Terry Smith was a testament to their offensive line. Let's just put it, that was my opinion. It was a testament to the way their offensive line played those last games under Terry. Completely a testament to them. If this success, and this is why I say the rubber meets the road, if success is going to happen offensively for this Penn State team in 2026, you're going to look back and say the development and the progression at along the offensive line, starting out as a box of chocolate with so many questions and way more questions than answers, was a turnkey for them having any success.
Andy, I think my opinion on the defensive tackles.
Well, that's a different one, yeah.
Good big is better than good small, okay? And the question still is, yeah, you got bigger players, but how good are they? These aren't guys who are, you know, superstar status at their prior schools. So, yeah, they're bigger, but they're unproven. We don't know. But it does, I think, show an indicator of what this coaching staff is looking for in those positions. All right, Andy, that's it for quarter two. Coming up, quarter three, your questions. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three, which means it's time for Ask Andy and it's time for your questions. If you want to send in your questions, it's on the app. There's an Ask Andy button. If not, hey, how about just sending me an email at info@ksnsports.net. That's info@ksnsports.net. We'll get your questions. We'll get them out to Andy, just like Matt from Massachusetts did. Andy, we're starting with a golf question. How about that?
Oh, golf questions, old school pop culture, music, food, they're all welcome.
Jim and Andy, all your golf talk made me want to ask you, given that you both have played at the Penn State courses, which golf course on college campuses would you want to play on? I'll just make a quick note. Neither Andy nor I live in the State College area. It has been years and years since I've played the Penn State courses, Andy.
Yeah, no, I played the blue course last year, I think a couple times. So I like the blue course. I prefer the blue over the white. I'll play the white. I don't mind the white. It's easier, gives you a little more room to – there's more room to roam on the white course. You can just bomb it and chase it. You can just bomb and gouge. Just hit it as hard as you can. Doesn't matter where it goes, pretty much. Just go chase it and find it. I like the blue course. I think it's got a couple gimmicky holes that I don't really like. But for the most part, that stretch along the road when you come in along the right-hand side, I can't remember what holes, back nine holes, leading to 18. It's like 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. That's a really strong, cool, good stretch of holes. So that's a good one. College campus, I'd love to play Yale's golf course in New Haven. I've heard it's like it could possibly be at the level of a championship type golf course, not a venue, but a golf course, that it has those elements. So that would be one of the ones that would top my list.
Let me adjust the question a little bit to make it more relevant to everyone.
Sure.
You live in the Harrisburg area. Where would you advise people to play who are in that area? what are your favorite courses?
So I would say public courses that anybody can play. I would top would be Royal Manchester. That's down. It's like kind of in this like York County area, Southern Dauphin County area. It's like 20, 25 minutes from Harrisburg. Good Lynxy style golf course. I like that one. Links at Gettysburg. Fantastic golf course. A little bit further. It's still in kind of this area. Those would be my two highly recommended. One and two on my list would be those two, public course wise.
Well, I'll give quickly in my area, smaller area, Berwick, Bloomsburg area. The Berwick Golf Course, it's a private course, but there's ways I think you could get on, member of the public. I belonged many years ago, just didn't play enough to justify it. Good track, tough course, good track. Public course is my area. We actually have two, Andy, that interestingly enough, both were sold in the last year or two. One called Rolling Pines is now going to be called the Willows. They were actually closed all of last year being redone, so I'm curious about that. The other course, it's called Arnold's. They were purchased last year. The guy who bought it, trying to fix it up, doing a great job. The greens, sometimes they just look spectacular. Put in the irrigation system for the fairways, really upgrading everything about the place. But the one quick note on it, it's a golf course with railroad tracks that run through the course. Oh, there's literally a hole where the railroad tracks are feet from the green, okay? So just a few feet away from the green. A train could be passing by you, Andy.
That's cool. Character. Yeah. Character on golf courses matters.
It does. It's really fascinating. One story, this is from many years ago. My uncle once hit a drive onto a railroad car. We say it was the longest drive in history. God knows, it probably ended up in the Midwest. All right, let's move on, Andy. Let's get to Chris from New York, who says, I feel like 10-2 this year is realistic with that easy schedule. Does 10-2 guarantee a playoff appearance?
Chris, 10-2, really? Okay. That's not realistic, but I don't think that's anywhere close to realistic. Does 10-2, yes, 10-2 is in. 10-2 in the Big Ten gets you in. 10-2 in the Big Ten gets you in. Yes. I'm going to say yes.
I'm just going to qualify it this way. If there's more 10-2 teams where someone 10-2 is not going to make the playoffs, this schedule is so weak recognized as being weak, I think they would send a message and keep Penn State out if it worked out that way.
Interesting.
Yeah, I just think that their schedule is so bad, Andy. All right, let's go to Jack and Tyrone. I could call him Salty Jack. Players making a boatload of money, then bailing out to another school willing to pay them a dollar more. Then they move on again and again till they've been at five schools. Then they sue for another year of eligibility. The coaches are no better. West Coast teams are playing in the Atlantic Coast Conference. The Southeast Conference and Big Ten wield their power like a weapon. Congress and the president threatening to get involved. Sometimes I think there are more court cases than games. Why am I still watching this disaster?
Because it's the game you love. It's your mess, Jack. It's our mess. It's a hot mess. It's a blank show, right? Yeah. It's our blank show. It's our hot mess. The ever-vescent and ever-present beauty of college football, it being your school, the school you identify with, the school you went to in many cases, or, you know, alumni, or the one you identified growing up because your parents took you to games, whatever it is, you watched them as a kid, that sort of attraction, that this is my school. Yeah. Put that in a, on a platter and then throw all those spoke wheels around it you just spoke of. And he's not, he does not, it's salty, but he's not wrong. It is, that's what it is. Is it's still not enough to drag you away from the plate at the center. It can't, more still stay than go. And you're like, yeah, but it's still, that's my school. That's my team. That's who I identify with. And I don't like the nine things around it that Jack listed per se. Those are Jack's grievances, but he doesn't like it. But it's not enough to drag him away. And that's the beauty of it. It's not enough, and it's a mess. It is a hot mess, and it's our hot mess. But it's still not enough to drag us away kicking and screaming.
And you know what, Andy, I agree. It's, and all of those things that Jack mentioned, you know what, just forget those. You do forget that once the whistle blows and the game starts.
You do. Or you go to your tailgate, or you schedule with your friends when we're going to travel up, et cetera, et cetera. You keep the structures that made you love it, and the beauty are still in place. It's just the game itself, when the whistle blows, Jimmy's right, it's still just the game. Everything else around it, you don't like. But it's not enough to pull you away.
The product itself succeeds despite itself.
Correct. Yeah.
The game itself is still the game. Okay, let's go to Jake in Arlington, Virginia, who says, Jim, you've been talking quite a bit about March Madness and your bracket. Will we ever have a similar bracket for football, especially if we get to 16 or 24 team playoff?
Do they not have brackets now?
I think he means like March Madness. Oh, like everybody in the world.
Everybody's doing a bracket. Okay.
You know, you got this. You know, you got right. Your bracket to fill out.
Will I don't fill out a bracket, but yeah.
Everybody but Andy fills out a bracket. Will 16? We fill out a bracket when we get to 16 teams?
So when you get, I think when you get to 16, you eliminate the first round buys, right? So that means everybody starts from the jump, right? There's not the week off, you know, did they have a week off? Does it help them? Blah, blah, blah. All that, you know, static noise conversation. Level playing field, 16, but it's going to, it just takes forever. I mean, something has to happen in the college football playoffs that make it, like the NCAA tournament, it's not the Super Bowl, but it's kind of like the Super Bowl. Even if you don't care about sports, you still fill out a bracket. College football is not there yet. It's got to, something's got to happen for it to reach that epic level. It's a money-making machine, but it's not at that. Outside of the sport, is it generally accepted? NCAA tournament because of the bracket, the Super Bowl. Those are our two institutions. College football is not one of them. So to answer Jake's question, it's a long walk home.
Yeah, it will take a while. I don't think it'll never reach the same level. But one of the things that the March Madness tournament has going, that it has 64 or even 68 teams.
Correct.
And it's done in 3 weeks. Okay. College football takes about 2 months to get through their playoff.
Way too long.
Yeah, just do it each week. You know, you get it, go through 3 weeks, 4 weeks tops, be done with it, you know, because in the week and a half, 2 weeks till you get there, and then is this week, is it going to be on a Tuesday night? Is it going to be on a Thursday night? Just once a week, it's what we're used to, Andy. Just do that.
Yeah, just make it consistent and make it relevant.
Exactly.
And don't take 2 months. It takes forever. They almost lose me. They almost lose us.
Yes, you lose that momentum. by waiting as long as they do. All right, that is it for Ask Andy. When we come back, we get back to our spring questions right after this.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy, I'm Jim. This is quarter number four of our show. Andy, we're going to get back to our spring camp issues and questions. And you know what? Let me go to this, Andy. And you've reprimanded me, you've scolded me about my talk about the spring game. All right.
And here we go.
I'm ready to make a concession.
Really?
There seem to be so many injuries. And again, you've got at least 85 players there on your roster. Come on, you should have enough to have a scrimmage, even if we get to see the younger player. But I think when you've got the depth of the issues, you know, we talked about the quarterback position a little bit. Rocco Beck, he's probably fine, would be able to play, no problem. But they don't want to risk anything with him. I understand. The backup, Alex Mansky, definitely out. Not even here. Another example, and this is all over the field, tight end is another position where the top three tight ends who are going to be very good, they're all limited. You know, you're jumping to like the fourth tight end but Andy, I think what some of this does is it provides an interesting opportunity for those young players who might be number three or number four in the depth chart to actually get a lot of reps. An example in the tight end room, Cooper Alexander, he comes in number four tight end at best. He's coming over with two other players from Iowa State. I got the chance to chat with him a week ago. Really nice young man, very easy to root for. But Andy, you know, just how important is this for these young guys who are going to get an opportunity to get out? Wide receiver is another position where the young guys are going to get an opportunity for a lot of reps.
It's minutely relevant on a micro level, very small. For his development, it's fine. Is it in the big picture? Now let's go to big picture, Jimmy. We're going from micro to macro. We're going small to big. In the big picture, Cooper Alexander getting a lot of reps this spring matter? Nope, not a bit. Is he going to impact the tight end room because he got a lot of reps in this spring? Nope. The three guys ahead of him are just that much better. You know, he's not a tight end to watch. At the end of the day, Andrew Rapley is your tight end to watch. That's an NFL tight end, Jimmy. That's the guy to watch. But they're limited right now. It's fine. Football doesn't start till September. It's April. I know this is spring practice. I know it's a new offense. But at the same time, it just seems like Matt in this transition is not going to rush or push envelopes or extend players beyond for the sake of it being new. It just seems like he's playing the long game and he has the patience despite the newness and taking over as the new head coach. Not easy to do. Not easy to do. But he has so much salt and pepper on him from Iowa State, he knows exactly what he's doing. And this is just the choice that he's made. Little bit of injury, limited.
Well, when and he uses the expression which I suspect we will soon get tired of, which is rather be slow and right than fast and wrong. And he's talking about the recovery for these guys who are coming off injury. Where I do think it because it's a new coaching staff, everything new going on, I think it's the silver lining to this is young guys getting reps, getting opportunities. Maybe we find out a bit more about these guys. And I think sometimes there's some nuance to this. And in talking to Cooper Alexander and talking to him about how the tight ends were used at Iowa State, he talked about there were like some three and sometimes even four tight ends on the field at the same time. So depth at tight end, even going as far down as the fourth on the pecking order, you might still get in the game. So I think that's interesting. Okay, let's move on. And Andy, I phrased the question like this. Are the Iowa State DBs who are coming in, Marcus Neal, Jameson Patton, and Jeremiah Cooper, and the linebackers, Cooper Abel and Caleb Bacon, are they ready for Big Ten prime time? These were good Big 12 players. Are they going to be good Big Ten players too?
So that's a lot of names. I'm not an Iowa State expert, however. So what I did, I can still answer your question very well. Here's what I'm going to say. Let's start on the DB group. And I'm going to give you Marcus Neal. He will emerge as a next level player in the Big Ten as a safety. I think Rocco Beck was the bright lights, big time sort of QB transfer. And he is. He's very important. But I'm saying Marcus Neal might have been one of the most important Iowa State guys to land in State College for the Nittany Lions in 2026. To me, he has NFL draft tools that are developing. He showed flashes of being an NFL draft player last year. And what I mean by that, in other words, he was very, very good last year and had flashes of elite. Young player, still has some eligibility left. The two linebackers, Cooper and Caleb, they're your old war horses, right? They're your dogs. They're senior transfers. They have a ton of starts. They have a wealth of experience. They're high-volume productivity guys. They mix and match however you need them and want them to. They're not elite on any level, Jimmy. They are not. But together, the two of them, they just seem to know how to play the game of football. Now, these are two old war horses that are sort of strutting their stuff now to a new group of coaches, right? They got a new DC, new staff on that side of the ball. So there's a little bit of that show me what you got in you, kid, that they get to bring back out of themselves. But at the end of the day, they're exactly who you think they are. They're going to play exactly like who you think they are. They're not going to be anything different than exactly who you think they are. And that is exactly what Penn State wants and needs from them and will demand of them at the linebacker position. So I think of your list, I think those three players are have the potential to be bright lights contributors in different ways. I think the linebackers are just going to be like, they're not the flashy kind. Like, let's face it, Tony Rojas is a flash player. These guys are not in any way, shape, and form. They're almost, you know, the polar opposite. But that's what Penn State's going to want and need from them. I think the most elite player and the one who will flourish in prime time in the Big Ten, I think it's Marcus Neal.
Andy, I think you put that well. And I'm glad you brought up Tony Rojas because he was the example I was going to give as a guy with the very high ceiling. These players, I think, have a high floor. We know we're going to get at least a minimum level of play. Right. At least good players, if not great players, Andy.
I think you're going to see Danton Lynn use a bunch of players because I think he's going to have a very – it's not like it's – please, I'm not saying it's going to be, you know, like what Penn State was when they had 19 starters, right? That's not the defense I'm talking about. I think they're going to use 18, 19, 17, 18, 19 guys, and it's going to be a lot of mix and match. And I think they're going to – I think they have the potential to be a good defense. I don't think there's greatness in this defense in any way, shape, or form, hardly. I think there's an elite player in Zion Tracy, and that's about it in my book. The rest of it is going to be – the sum of the parts has to be greater than the individuals. There's not six NFL players running around on that side of the ball this year. But I do think they have a wealth of underneath flow that allows them to be very versatile and to try things, right? They can try and mix and match in many different ways. So I think you're going to see a lot of guys play, not because they have to because they're elite, but because this defense is going to demand that they have that kind of sort of capability to mix and match them to make it even be effective and, you know, a competent defense inside the Big Ten.
Andy, last question is, and I think this is a question we're going to have for a while, and it's on the recruiting. Penn State now has his first three commits for 27. They're all DBs. I think they're all cornerbacks, all three stars. Not sure how much emphasis to put on that, but these are not the guys that you build a program around. You know, this is not Drew Aller and Nick Singleton. These are – where are we? Can Matt Campbell and his staff recruit with the big boys?
So I think this is a time thing for me. All right, I've thought about this. First of all, thanks to the AD – he picked up a recruiting shambles, hot mess, right? I don't think Matt is in a hurry. And let's just face it, Jimmy, how many of these five-star and four-star kids are looking at Penn State now based on what happened last year? Changeover in coaching, you know what I mean? High expectations falling off the side of the cliff. There's not a lot of Q factor to sell right now. New coach, was good at Iowa State. Has a good culture, but really, you know, is he sending a lot of players to the NFL? No. He's got so I think this take the 27 class, I think, is still gonna look like an Iowa State type recruited class. Depends on then you gotta go back to the product that they're putting out there. What does 27 look like? That's gonna matter for the 28 class to a degree, a little bit. I think, in my estimation, 28 a little bit. The first time you can really start holding Matt's feet to the fire, and I'm not doing this because I think Matt deserves it. I'm thinking this is just the way it's going to be. This can't be a – this isn't a fast fix. He's not a bad recruiter. It doesn't mean he doesn't know what he's looking for. I think for them to be in the next level, it's going to take till 2029 class.
You're more patient than most Penn State fans. All right, yes. That is it, Andy. Thank you, Andy. Thank all of you. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.